Welcome to BizRocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for BizRocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to BizRocket Radio. This is John Baker. We're here once again on this Wednesday morning in Atlanta, and I've got four guests with us this morning that are going to be focusing on sales and sales management. And all these individuals have extensive experience in that area as well as in the consulting side. We're going to get a little bit of an introduction from them, and then we're going to delve into some juicy topics on sales. So I'm going to start off with Everett Hill. Everett is the president of Catalytic.
John.
There you go, Catalytic. I told you, reading is one of those things. Catalytic Advisors. So, Everett, welcome in.
Thanks, John, and appreciate you having me on the show. It's really rapidly becoming an institution here in the business community in Atlanta. I'm the only person I know of in my graduating class from Harvard Business School who went into sales. Here's the thing. I took an undergraduate degree in engineering because I loved solving solving problems. But once I made my first sale, I was hooked on developing win-win solutions for customer problems. The first product I sold was plant-scale ultrafiltration equipment to a little startup company called Amgen, which is now the largest biotechnology firm in the world. And so I've covered a number of customer verticals, biotech and pharma, airlines, ballparks, Walmart, quick-serve restaurants, and a host of others, including durable goods manufacturers. Most recently, I've been, throughout my career, I've been a sales leader and general manager, although I took a fascinating detour into corporate transformation while at Coca-Cola Enterprises. My largest P&L was $250 million at Hostess Brands, and my largest sales team was 1,200 at CCE. Yes, I sold Twinkies and Wonder Bread while I ran the Hostess business in the Southeast. And last year, I founded Catalytic Advisors to help CEOs build world-class sales and service.
So tell us a little bit more about Catalytic Advisors. What's the process you take your clients through to kind of help them?
It's a very customized process, John, because the growth opportunity that each company has is very specific to their situation. So I don't call myself a sales coach or a sales training person or a sales force specialist. I focus on the top line and how the company can get to the next level of revenue growth. So it may be as basic as the company's strategy. Are they tackling the right opportunities in their marketplace? So things like customer segmentation and focusing on the right products for those customers might be the issue. Or it might be a real sales opportunity. They don't have the right people on the team, or the individuals on the sales team are not getting the proper coaching. So because I've been in the CEO shoes, I can help lead them through the various levels of diagnostics to really identify where the priorities are, and then we roll up our sleeves and tackle those individual opportunities.
Good stuff. So, Harvard guy, in the sales shoes. When you go back to reunions, do you like tell people what you do? Or is it like, oh yeah, I'm not a biophysicist.
I'm really proud of having been a salesperson
there
my whole career. It's an honorable profession, and like I say, I help people solve problems.
Yeah.
And so it's been a lot of fun. It's been rewarding. And now I get to do it on a scale for a lot of different types of clients, particularly in manufacturing and distribution.
Good stuff. Well, we're going to come back to you in a second. We're going to start the panel discussion in a minute. The next guest we have is Jill Pollard, and Jill is the president of Head Coach, Inc. Welcome in, Jill.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me today.
Sure.
I spent the early part of my career in the corporate sector at a national hotel franchise company. At that company, I held positions in marketing, sales, and operations. I then spent 10 years at Emory University's Gazueta Business School. Ultimately, I served as the director of advising and leadership for the undergraduate business program. While I was at Emory, I earned an MBA with a focus on leadership development and organization and management.
Mm-hmm.
I then left Emory to join Head Coach and focus exclusively on coaching. And I've coached leaders in a variety of industries, including banking, consumer products, and transportation, and across organizational departments, including operations, finance, and, of course, sales and marketing.
Yeah, so the sales and marketing piece, have you done mostly that, or the coaching of kind of the executive level? What's been your forte?
Our forte is leadership coaching across all different areas, and certainly it's always exciting and interesting to work with our sales leaders.
Yeah. So what has been the most challenging piece that you had of transitioning into something where you're doing consulting versus corporate America?
The most challenging part, for me personally, probably business development, honestly. My passion is the coaching. And, you know, as part of a small business, we all have to work towards business development and keep the business going. So that's a challenge we're facing currently. But It'll work out positively, and always looking for new opportunities. But really, my passion is the coaching and the work itself.
Good. Well, welcome in.
Thank you.
So our next guest is Dwayne Gingrich, and Dwayne is joining us today as a sales and marketing expert with lots of background in that area. But I'll let him kind of give us a taste of where that came from.
Great. Good morning. It's great to be here. Appreciate it. I've been a strategic marketing and sales business development leader throughout my entire career. Much of that has been in supply chain management and logistics. I was actually one of the original startup team members that created UPS Worldwide Logistics, which was a subsidiary of UPS way back when. And from UPS Worldwide Logistics, that developed into, it became UPS Logistics Group, and then today it's UPS Supply Chain Solutions. So literally was a part of that and enjoyed that ride, if you will, from concept up through 15 years later was an $8 billion very important unit to UPS. Also, I've been vice president of sales and marketing for Schneider National, which is a $3+ billion company, also a leader in the industry. I've been blessed over the course of my career with really some wonderful training, both tactical and strategic. But it's also become a passion in terms of my own searching out, reading books, or learning as much as I can about it. Personally, I'm what I'm really about is creating value for customers and clients, but also for my own organization or for the selling organization. And what I love to do is to learn from markets, from customers, from competitors, and internally, and to use that learning and that knowledge to come up with winning strategies to succeed.
What would you say from that experience that you've had that you've learned about what makes the selling or marketing piece of a business successful with the background that you've got?
Well, I would emphasize the strategy part of it. A lot of people will stress how difficult execution is, and I would in no ways diminish the difficulty and challenges of execution, but you need a good strategy to begin with, because if you have a faulty strategy, no matter how well you execute it, you're going down the wrong path. And developing a strategy is not as easy as most people make it out to be. And what it does requires a lot of hard work, and that's where the digging in and understanding markets and talking to customers, and actually sales forces, they're constantly on the front lines talking to both existing customers and prospective customers. They're a wealth of information to understand before you decide what path you're going to take.
Okay, good stuff. Well, welcome in. So our next guest is Bob Kelly. He's the chairman of the Sales Management Association. So welcome in, Bob.
Thank you.
Maybe you could give
nice
a little background on you.
Sure, happy to. I'm chairman and founder of the Sales Management Association. The Sales Management Association is a global professional association for two jobs in the world. Firstly, sales managers, as you might guess, given the name. Sales managers at every level in organizations, from senior-most sales leaders to first-line sales managers, people directly managing salespeople. And the second job we serve is what we call sales operations. That's not a universally used term, but it's a function that describes a support role, predominantly for larger sales organizations, that seeks to make the sales force more productive using technology, process discipline, and a number of other support functions, often a staff role to the chief sales officer. So we have, I guess as of today, somewhere north of 2,100 individual members across the world in 35 countries. And we have a dozen or so underwriting sponsors, training firms, management consulting firms, academic institutions interested in those two professions as well. So the mission of the Sales Management Association is to provide tools and training and networking and content to the community that we serve, that is professionals mostly engaged in managing sales forces effectively. And just a little bit about my background prior to the Sales Management Association. I'm somewhat of an accidental association leader. I didn't really set out to do what I'm doing today.
Right.
But about 3 years ago, not quite 3 years ago, I was working for a firm here in Atlanta, a division of Genuine Parts Company, actually, in a sales operations role, and was looking for an organization like this and realized there wasn't one, and that's sort of what started the beginning of the organization. So in my career, I've worked in either in or around sales organizations, most recently at S.P. Richards, a division of Genuine Parts Company, where I was vice president of sales operations and strategy for that business unit. It was about $1.7 billion in annual revenue, division of Genuine Parts. Prior to that, I had a stint in the telecommunications industry, working for one of the larger CLECs in the late 90s called Intermedia, which went on to be acquired by WorldCom. Worked there in a business planning and marketing strategy role, and previously spent time in management consulting with a firm that really focused in sales organization reengineering and realignment. In my personal career leading up to this role, my passion has really been around how sales organizations are governed and supported, and I'm happy to be continuing that focus. It's an exciting place to be.
That's a difficult startup. I mean, you've got to get everybody who's kind of in that role, whether it's companies or individuals, small, large, medium, to kind of buy into the fact that you can bring together some value for those groups. How did you get it started?
Yeah, honestly, it was so hard. I can't really remember. It was somewhat traumatic.
It's all gone away, right? Your brain suppressed it.
Yeah, So honestly, it wasn't that hard. What was hardest is trying to figure out why there wasn't something like it already. It was clearly an unmet need in the marketplace, and that was the greatest single thing we had in our favor starting the organization. There are plenty of people interested in the topic and plenty of organizations that can provide value. I mean, sitting at this table are three people in professional services roles who are doing excellent work serving that same need. So the idea was simply to create a tent for people like Everett and Dwayne and Jill and the thousands of others, plus the hundreds of thousands of practitioners out there who can benefit from the insight. Anyway, a more serious answer to your question was, you know, I got a few initial sponsors, a few training firms. From my consulting days, I had a number of colleagues who were interested, and got our first member in May of 2008 after we put up a website.
That's good timing. Yeah, mid 08. Awesome for business.
Yeah, just right. Yeah, timed it just right.
Nice. Could have been March of 09. That might have been a little tougher.
Yeah, that was the apocalypse, as I recall.
It was pretty close
economy.
To it. Yeah, it was.
But interestingly, you know, that was an important time for a lot of sales organizations. Our first member, incidentally, a funny story, was a sales manager from Microsoft who was in Romania. And I remember the PayPal receipt coming over by email, and at the time I thought it was fraudulent, you know. But
right, someone from Nigeria asking you for a password.
Right,
or
right. A Nigerian.
I just need to put some money in this fund,
yeah.
So I need somebody to bring it in, and you can get 10% of it just for giving me your Social Security number.
Yeah, it was the first inkling I had really that the community is easily reached across the globe, and you know.
Right.
The world certainly is flat. Our business is a really interesting reflection of that.
Yep. Well, good stuff. I welcome in all our guests and our panel discussion. I think we've got some good questions to go through, and then I want to just go ahead and get started with the first. What we'll do is we'll kind of I'll throw out a question, and we'll kind of start around with Everett and kind of work around, but jump in if you got something interesting to say. Just no arguing, no beating each other up. We'll keep it civilized in here. All right, Everett?
You got it, John.
Can you keep that out? Harvard guys, I know. You guys are tough.
Ooh.
So sales coaching, sales management, do you think it's more of an art or a science?
John, I really believe it's a science. It can be practiced in a repeatable and measurable fashion like any science. And I was taught a specific approach by the late Henry Schimberg, CEO of Koch Enterprises in the 90s. And his approach became the cornerstone of my leadership style. A quick story, I had the honor of a few minutes at Henry's retirement party in 2000. And it was just the two of us, and I said, Henry, at this real milestone in your career, what's going through your mind? And he said, he took off his glasses, and we're here in Atlanta. I'm sure there are listeners who also know Henry. He had a particular way of taking off his glasses and becoming reflective, and he says, I hope that I'll be remembered that all I ever wanted to do was teach. And despite the fact that he was a hard-driving CEO, he was a teacher at his core, and he taught the 30 or 40,000 of us and to coach. And it was a very clear methodology that I've actually written down as a white paper just because it was a story that I really felt needed to be told. Unfortunately, the question of art versus science really continues to be raised because sales thought leaders haven't provided enough specific tools so that because of that, sales coaching really remains a touchy-feely exercise for most practitioners. Also, sales managers are generally not held accountable for coaching, let alone doing it well. So it's not practiced frequently, and when it is, it's hit or miss. Time and again, I see company cultures that are maniacal in their focus on driving results, and they do that through a detailed understanding of the sales funnel. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's half a loaf. Add a focus on sales coaching, and the numbers become really a whole lot easier to deliver. Look, sales is a very personal process, and not just for the customer, but for the sales rep. Consistent and diligent coaching can bring about a real change in an entire sales force, not just the solid performers, but across the board. So that's why I believe coaching is a science.
Don't you think in sales, most salespeople are more, they're more art than science? Don't you think they tend to be more? Jill, what do you think about that?
Well, when I thought through this question, I think I thought of it on somewhat of a philosophical level, thinking about how I perceive art and how I perceive science. And to me, art is an expression that we typically experience via our senses. Science, on the other hand, is basically a system that we use to organize information. So I came to the conclusion that really effective sales coaching relies on the integration of both. Like art, there are an infinite number of ways of expressing our message in the sales process. And then like the sciences, there are proven methods, as Everett talked about, that lead to a successful outcome. So I would say it's an integration of both.
Perfect. You guys have anything else, Dwayne or Bob?
Yeah, I'll chime in. And Everett, I think we can agree to disagree. where I think we agree is that sales is a profession. And for a long time, it was not given that right. level of respect. And what has brought that respect is the science component to it, the processes, the techniques, et cetera. Those are things that can be learned, they can be taught, they can be learned, and they can be applied fairly universally. There's the right situations to do certain things and not do other things, et cetera. And that's kind of the science aspect of it. But there's definitely a lot of art because you're dealing with human beings. You know, companies don't make purchases, human beings do. And so there really is a significant art component to it of deciding what to do, when, and how, and all of those kinds of things. So I think it really is that integration that Jill mentioned of art and science, and maybe a better label is it's a profession.
If I may, I think that what Dwayne is referring to, when you talk about human beings being the person who actually makes the purchase and makes the sale as opposed to organizations, right? Organizations are made up of human beings. What he's really getting at is the relationships, which is where our work focuses. And relationships are much more of an art than a science. And so to see how relationships are such an integral part of sales, I think that Dwayne made that point really well.
Yeah, my take, Bob here, by the way, my take really is that strictly speaking, it's neither. I think, you know, a way of integrating, but also both, a way of integrating both might be to refer to it as more of a craft. You know, I think coaching is only effective if it's practiced. Great coaches are people who have a lot of experience in the trade of coaching. And so, you know, and you think about great coaches, no one ever accused any of the great coaches you can think of in athletics or any other endeavor. You know, think about Vince Lombardi, someone like that. No one accused him of being an artist nor a scientist. But what he was a very accomplished person at a craft that included elements of both. And was highly applied and was something that he did, with a lot of conviction and passion. So, it's an interesting question. I think maybe a more interesting question is, why does coaching matter today in sales organizations? So not to steer the conversation, but...
Go steer away. Yeah. Makes my job a lot easier.
Yeah, so coaching is something people are talking a lot about in sales management, and that's not always been the case. And it's curious to me. I'm not entirely sure why, but I have a couple of ideas around it. So one is that there have been some firms who've advanced the coaching agenda. I think maybe most notably an organization called the Sales Executive Council, which is part of the Corporate Executive Board, who publicized some research and sort of an agenda around why organizations should coach. Their research indicated that organizations that really coach well, that focus on developing salespeople's skills, had better results, and the research was compelling, and it got a lot of attention, and they did a nice job of publicizing that. And that entered the, I think, vernacular of sales effectiveness professionals maybe 6 or 8 years ago.
Is it having a coach or coaching?
Well, they only were ambitious enough to understand how much coaching is done as perceived by coachees.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they ask. How much coaching do you get?
Right.
And so your question, though, is good, and it's very important because not all organizations who say they coach really coach. Anyway, another thing that's happening is just the degree of change in sales organizations, which has put a lot of pressure on adapting to new circumstances. And in that environment, coaching people to do things differently or to maximize the limited time they have in front of a customer, those are all things that have become much, much more important. And it's put a lot of pressure on the performance of salespeople and also adapting that performance to very quickly changing circumstances. And I think that's what's driving the interest. And anyway, I have a real interest in that question. Why is it? Why does it matter today?
What do you guys feel is are some of the characteristics and skill sets that make a good coach a good coach?
Well, first of all, I love Bob's use of the word craft. And sales coaching is a very different craft from selling.
Yeah.
And that's one of the primary things that research like the Corporate Executive Board have brought to light. Because so often you see companies promoting their best salesperson into the role of sales manager and hoping that they could replicate their great performance across 6 or 8 or 12 people, and it doesn't work. That they need to learn that craft of sales coaching, which involves a very different skill set. I maintain that a coaching mindset or skill set involves not just the execution, to use Dwayne's term, is not about putting a set calendar of meetings on your in your appointment book with your salespeople. Coaching is 24/7 with your salespeople, and you look for those coachable moments because when somebody is receptive to the idea that, hey, here's how you could have closed that sale more quickly, or here's how you could have learned who the real decision maker is at that client, they learn that lesson and integrate it much more rapidly.
How important is the timing of that lesson?
Instantaneous.
Yeah.
Jill?
Yeah, Everett touched on coachable moments, and that's an important part of providing feedback, is that it be timely, that it can't wait till the performance review that occurs according to the organizational schedule
over
6 months. Right.
Yeah.
It's got to be timely. And in terms of what makes a good coach, I've got some clear ideas on this. The basics of coaching are really between the person the person who's being coached and the coach. You've got to have a trusting relationship. You've got to be providing feedback, and exactly as Everett said, in a timely fashion, and support, ongoing support. And the methods to do that, a couple of the most important ways to do that are through listening, attentive and active listening. And really, the essence of coaching is asking the right questions at the right time in the right way to help the person who's being coached arrive at those answers on their own so that they can really internalize the learning, as opposed to one person, the coach, telling another person, this is how you do it.
And I'm going to echo that along the same line. First, I'll start in terms of one of the basic sales training components, three-step things in terms of dealing with customers that I learned was to, number one, focus on the customer, two, earn the right to advance, and then thirdly, persuade through involvement, meaning you don't tell the customer what to do. You help them come to the right conclusion for themselves. And it's exactly the same process with coaching. The focus is on who you're coaching. You need to earn the right to advance, that trust that Jill just referred to. And extremely important is that you're not just telling them what to do or pointing out what they could have done differently or better or whatever. You're asking questions and helping them come to understand what they could have done differently, what they could have done better. And when it comes from their own thinking and reasoning, it's much stronger and much more lasting and will be much more effective in the future.
Now, what we're talking about here is kind of the direct teaching of the salesperson, so sales manager to salesperson. Mm-hmm. Let's go back a step beyond that and talk about the coach of the manager, right? Which is kind of you guys. That's kind of what a lot of you guys are doing, or a lot of where your experience is coming from. What separates a great coach of a manager from somebody who's just kind of going through the motions?
John, I don't see it as any differently. Going back to my Henry Schimberg example, coaching an organization of 30 or 40,000 people, he coached his direct reports, and by in so doing, he modeled the behavior he wanted the rest of us to have with our sales teams. And so it was very simple. What would Henry do in this situation? So the fundamental principles that Jill described of coaching are effective no matter what level of the organization you're dealing with. The venue may be street level or boardroom kind of level, but the basic principles hold true.
Anyone else?
Well, just from my standpoint, which is, you know, many of our members are large organizations that are struggling mightily with coaching. Many of them have a commitment to providing coaching, but they have a management core who doesn't know how to coach. And it's the coaching to that level, that is providing coaching to coaches, that represents a mighty struggle with many organizations. And the elements of that struggle are as follows, at least some of them are. One is that management simply doesn't have time allocated to truly coach, to truly help salespeople develop into better salespeople. It's not really on the agenda of most management today. So part of the struggle is creating time and a commitment of the organization to do that. And there are economic trade-offs to doing that are difficult to manage. Another is what you might simply call clarity of task. That is actually describing what it is you'd like people to accomplish so that the first-line sales manager can communicate that to a salesperson. And similarly, a senior leader can communicate that to the management core. What is it we're asking our people to do? Sounds like an easy question, but it's a very hard question to answer with clarity for a lot of sales organizations.
The concept of not providing sales training to your sales team seems foreign. Seems like it doesn't make any sense, right? Is that something that's shifted? Has that changed? Or is that something that's kind of historically been the case?
Well, let's clarify for a moment the difference between training and coaching, because the difference is very important to this conversation. These folks probably think a lot about this question. In my mind, it's kind of simple. The training is really helping people pick up content knowledge about a product, for example, an offering, even about a methodology if you are implementing a sales methodology. Coaching is really the applied version of that. That is, it's observing how people actually do that, helping them do it better, and suggesting things they can do to develop higher skill in those areas.
You know, and that's a great point, Jill. I'm going to come to you in just a second. One of the things that I've seen a lot of issues with is these coaching companies have a hard time customizing the approach that they take to an industry or to a person. So take my industry, financial advisor, right? We've got hundreds of different advisors and kind of how they work and what they do. And one coach may have a kind of a certain way of doing it, and you try and apply that to somebody else, and it's like doesn't even come close. So how important is it to be on point with the type of salesperson that you're dealing with, or the industry even, Jill?
Yeah, you both made excellent points, and John, you spoke to exactly what was on my mind. Coaching is a process in which the coach and the client, they work through it together, and typically the direction of the coaching engagement is based on the specific client needs. Mm. And it's highly personalized and individualized. Effective coaching should be highly personalized and individualized, whereas training tends to be in a group forum. The direction and the agenda of the training tend to be predetermined.
Right.
It's not quite as individualized. So I think that's an important distinction.
And recent studies show that something like 80 or 85% of sales training has no impact after 120 days. So the difference in my mind between coaching and training is that coaching has a very lasting impact for the individual who's practicing that craft. And training, particularly because it's not often reinforced very well, dissipates into the ether.
And managers aren't good coaches? That's a hot question.
No. The answer is
Bob,
no.
I've worked with some who are either very good coaches or over time through their own coaching experience become very good coaches as they internalize the coaching process. I think that Bob made a good point that a lot of times the expectations within an organization are such that the manager does not have the time to dedicate towards coaching. So I think for a manager to effectively coach, first of all, they have to show and demonstrate a personal commitment to the development of the people on their team. And they have to really understand that it's an essential part of their job, that leadership is about developing their team and helping their team to be successful, not executing the sales for their team.
It's interesting because the whole coaching concept, like you said, Bob, has come up. It's kind of recent. I mean, maybe since the studies have been produced and the results are out there, but it seems like everybody is a coach now. What makes the difference between somebody who's a real coach and someone who's just kind of a passerby? No comment.
No, I got
no,
it.
I'm
on it. I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but at first I'll agree with your the gist of your observation, which is that coaching has the elements of a fad, and or as I like to call it, a meme. I don't know if you've heard that word. It's an in vogue word to describe internet fads, like cats playing the piano sort
right.
of videos sort of thing. And coaching is not much different in most organizations. Most organizations say that coaching is very important. They say that their managers should coach. If you ask managers, managers will view themselves as coaches. But then when you ask questions that measure how much actual coaching is being done, you get a much different picture. We've recently done research in this area and found that only about a quarter of organizations that say they are coaching are actually doing things that correlate with known positive coaching initiatives and organizations, the specific kinds of conversations and behaviors. We've also found, by the way, that if you ask most organizations if coaching is strategic to their sales organization's success, they will say, yes, it is. It is among the very most important initiatives that we can do as an organization. But then if you ask, and when we asked the question, we asked it in the context of a list of other things, other possible initiatives like implementing technology or getting new customers, et cetera. When you ask how much executive leadership support is given to that very same list, a curious thing happens with coaching. It sort of falls out as the only thing in the list of important initiatives that is viewed as among the most important, but is also among the least supported by executive leadership. And in my mind, I think that is one thing that separates great coaching organizations. There's a commitment from the very top of the organization that is part of the culture of the organization, that coaching is a priority, and that managers will have time to coach and will be supported in coaching with some specific things that help managers coach.
I absolutely agree. The difference between the faddish masses of people who coach and good coaching is that there are demonstrated results. In my case, I became a convert using solid coaching methodology in turning around three organizations in a row where I was the general manager. So Bob mentions that there are specific questions you can ask of an organization. It's about measurement and connecting the dots between those measured activities and the demonstrated results of the business, which, as I mentioned in my case, was dramatic improvements in the bottom line profitability.
Dwayne, I've got a question for you. From a sales perspective, how important is it when you are that person getting coaching? I would imagine. Have you gotten coaching in the past?
Yes, good and bad.
So tell us from that perspective, what has been good, what has been bad?
Well, usually the good is again where you have the respect and trust of the coach himself or herself, and you feel that they genuinely care about you and your success. And I think we were talking about, you know, management versus coaching. I think part of coaching is very important. Part of that is actually caring for the individual that you're coaching, and your objective is for them to be successful. And what I've always found, even as a sales manager in coaching others, was if I coach them well and they're successful, by default, I'm successful. And so that works out pretty well. Some of the mistakes, I think, in coaching that I've experienced, I'll name just a couple. One is judging. You know, that judging doesn't work. Telling people what they did wrong, and as opposed to in coaching, what you want to do is encourage right behavior. You want them to recognize wrong behavior and be conscious of it so that they can make improvements in the future. But judging is a mistake that's frequently made. The other is telling people what to do, and that's kind of that's not just training, but if you're just telling someone what to do, as opposed to, I mean, we touched on it just briefly earlier, but persuading people to reason through it in their own mind and come through. And again, you, as a coach, you can guide them right to where you want. And I've been in that situation as well, where I was coached. But when I've come to that conclusion myself, that's when it's going to carry on for the rest of my career.
What other thoughts do you guys have on characteristics that are maybe not so successful that coaches embark on?
I think that Bob touched on an important point, talking about having support from all levels of the organization, specifically from the top of the organization. And in the coaching work we do, what that means is not just that those folks are saying, oh, yes, we want coaching. It's demonstrated through their actions. So when we're working with a coaching client, their supervisor is actively involved in the coaching engagement, and we're meeting, you know, the three individuals, the coach, the client, and the client supervisor regularly, and making sure that the client is being supported from all directions, everyone's aligned and working towards the same goals. So I think actionable involvement, demonstrating that there truly is support at the higher levels of the organization, is critical.
Everett, you talk a lot about tracking and numbers and measurement, right?
Right.
How often, and Jill, you're talking about meeting and kind of reviews and those kinds of things. How many touch points are required? Is there a kind of a magic number or something that goes in and says, look, you really need to be communicating and measuring these many things and doing it this often, once a week, once a month, once a year? What are your thoughts there?
There are no hard and fast rules on that, John, but the general guidance I would give is that it's more frequent than you think, but it varies by the skill level of the organization that's being coached. Fundamentally, the most obvious sign of an organization that's not engaging with coaching is that you see extreme variation between the best and worst performers, and so there's kind of a shrug that says, well, okay, we need to offload those bottom third or those C players and replace them with A players. And that's a cycle that will be repeated over and over again if the organization hasn't built a coaching culture.
Jill, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, Everett, that's a great point that you raise, that it's really about building a culture of coaching, that it's pervasive across the organization in all directions, that people understand, that people are bought into what coaching is about, that we do have a culture of providing ongoing feedback in a trusting and supportive approach to help everybody to be as successful as they personally can be. So I think you're exactly right. It's critical to develop a culture of coaching.
I got one quick observation about what good coaches do with salespeople, but what sales managers in general don't do nearly enough of with salespeople, and that's practice. There's just not very much emphasis on practicing key skills. You think about how important that is to other performance-focused professions, you know, athletics, for example. It's an easy comparison. Salespeople need to practice those things you want them to be good at, but for whatever reason, they don't often.
They practice because they're last minute thinkers a lot of times, right?
Speaking from
the horse's mouth, I mean, I a lot of times you'll go into something and be like, okay, I can pull this off. I can take.
Let's wing it.
Let's wing it. And a lot of times they've been rewarded because they are kind of good on their feet. But in the same vein, if they've practiced, and I think you hit a good chord there, if they've practiced, they've gotten not just good, but great at either delivery or making a point or something that they needed to do there, you got to sharpen the saw all the time.
Yeah, so organizations have to ask themselves, do you really want them practicing on customers?
Right.
Or do you want them practicing where, you know, even the practice itself is better if it's not in front of a customer? Managers have to find those opportunities, I think.
And I think he's right. And the practice is not about creating a script, certainly, but it's about preparedness. It's about creating a guide. And this is something that we do in any coaching work, practicing difficult conversations, preparing for those difficult conversations, and doing some specific role playing. And of course, the ultimate conversation does not unfold exactly as the role play went, but it puts the manager or the person being coached in a position to go into that conversation feeling more confident, more prepared, and ready for a successful outcome.
Yeah, I differ on that because role playing is good, but there's nothing like a learning experience when you're in the line of fire. And what I advocate for frontline sales managers is to go on sales calls with their sales rep and be quiet and observe come right out of the sales call and say, did you accomplish the objectives you were looking for? And if not, how could you have better executed what we said you were going to do when you went in? And that is light years beyond what you might get in a role play scenario, because it's fresh, the adrenaline's flowing, and there's money at stake.
Joe?
But Everett, what about doing the role play before you walk into the meeting and then coming out of the meeting and having that debrief that you suggested?
Sure. With somebody who's early on into their sales career or learning the sales process or learning the industry, absolutely. Doing a full-blown role play in the car before you go in and make the call is something that I would do. With an experienced account rep, I would just do the discussion of what are your goals and objectives, mm-hmm. and then provide the more granular level of discussion after the call.
And I think, Everett, I agree with you that it's going to vary depending on the individual and where they are in the process and what it is you're working with them on. And so that oftentimes it is important for the manager to stay quiet in the sales scenario and observe and then deal with it immediately afterward, because it'll have the best reaction and training there. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the four phases, from being unconsciously incompetent to being consciously incompetent to being consciously
competent
to yes. being unconsciously competent. And you're the people you're coaching are going to be at different levels of that, and depending on what issue you're working on them with. And so, but I think it's the coach's role to understand where the person they're coaching is, and to then appropriately coach that situation.
I'm going to circle back with kind of a last question before we get into kind of our wrap-up question, and that is, if coaching is so critical, how many companies have you guys found that actually have not managers but coaches that are salaried within that organization? And if you found that, how big do companies typically need to be to have something like that?
As an external coach, we're the consultants brought in from the outside.
Right.
And I think, of course, I believe in that model, because as Dwayne was suggesting earlier, when I walk into a coaching meeting, an initial coaching meeting with a client, I can look at them and say, my only intention here is for you to be successful. I've got no dog in this fight on any level at this organization other than your success. So I think that is really an ideal model. What I see more often is companies that are using their internal HR professionals and asking them to coach. And I'm interested to hear all of your thoughts, but it presents to me as a real conflict of interest and not an effective model.
Everett's over here, yeah. Like twinging and like crossing his.
Oh my God, HR doing coaching—that is the epitome of a wrong-headed approach to execute.
Well, let's not say HR. Let's say a whole department of you guys that a Coca-Cola or a larger company brings in. How big do you need to be?
Usually they're external, is my understanding.
Why?
Because that unbiased third party, that objective person, I think it's very difficult to be internal and effectively coach.
Okay. All right.
My quick answer to that would be, it certainly depends. But for those organizations where developing salespeople internally is a priority, and that's not a priority everywhere, by the way, but where it is, I like the model where the coaching is integrated into the management position, because I think you lose too much if you attempt to outsource that role. And your original question was, how many companies do that? I would say of the companies that I've encountered, predominantly through our research, that aspire to that model, that is, that say that coaching is important, I'd say that fewer than a fifth are really doing that in a meaningful way, really providing meaningful coaching with a real commitment. So the answer from my perspective is very few.
What do you guys see is the future of sales coaching?
Well, I think let's start with what's the cutting edge on selling right now. And I'll go back to Bob's reference to the corporate executive board. I'm very excited about their research into their most recent work, talking about the challenger salesperson. And that's a salesperson who is not there to provide a solution, the classical context that we've heard over the last couple of decades is ask the right questions to get to the bottom of the issues so that you can build a solution for the customer. That's rapidly being replaced because customers are so knowledgeable now, because information is so readily available. They want their salespeople to teach them about their industry, what is the latest how are problems being solved outside of their company but within their industry. Those salespeople are getting the appointments that last an hour, and the rest are being ignored. So I see the evolution of sales, the profession, starting with that point and going forward.
Any other comments on that?
Quick one from here. There are a number of things happening in sales organizations that will touch coaching. There are some trends, for example, with mobility, with technology in general, with the use of analytics, and with social media. And these are all big ideas that are sort of tailwinds pushing the practice of sales management and the way sales organizations work in a lot of different directions. I think it touches coaching because in the not-too-distant future, we'll see new ways of capturing what happens in sales calls. I mean, a gating problem with providing coaching today is getting managers to observe selling in B2B direct sales organizations. Well, the technology exists today to record all of those interactions. Some firms are even marketing solutions toward that end. And with the advent of speech-to-text and with speech analytics, it's not at all, hard to foresee the time when we'll be able to not only record every interaction with salespeople and customers, but to analyze it, much in the same way that call centers do this today. It's very common to record every interaction by telephone. Well, the day is coming, and it's coming soon, when that will happen with direct sales interactions, in-person sales calls. And I think what this will do is really create much more leverage and scalability to some of these coaching ideas. It's a very compelling and a different model, but there's some interesting things happening there that will be fun to watch over the next 5 years.
Well, the diagnosis from that is so much better if you actually – it's like – doing an MRI versus just asking somebody if it feels okay. You can actually see what's going on when you see into the meeting and see what they're saying and doing. Dwayne?
Well, much of what I've dealt with is the complex sale where it's minimum $1 million a year contract plus, in many cases, tens of millions of dollars. And there are teams that are on the buying side.
Yeah.
And so I think what I've seen as far as, you know, trend or evolution is, you know, in the past, the technical skills were very much stressed, and those are really pretty much a given now. I mean, that's kind of back to the science part of it. That's pretty straightforward and can be trained and coached pretty easily. More recently and extremely important is the strategic selling aspects. And I think what has become much more important in the complex sale is the whole relationship and, if you will, kind of that trusted advisor. And I think that's an important part of future coaching.
Okay. We are running out of time. I'm going to get to the last question for each of you, and that is your pearl of wisdom. So I'm going to start with Everett. And then, Everett, when you're done with that, any contact information that you might want to give on, you know, how people may be able to reach out to you?
Sure. We touched on a little bit earlier about bringing someone in from the outside, and I just wanted to comment on that, John, because some of your listeners may be wondering how to get started on a better coaching discipline for their sales force. And if you're up to bat and the bases are loaded, there's a big opportunity for your business, and you can't seem to drive in any runs, that's when you need to bring in somebody from the outside, because the time to capitalize on it is now. Don't wait until the bottom of the ninth and two outs, because getting help from the outside can dramatically accelerate your process, and the cost of bringing in that a person from the outside can be paid for very quickly by the ability to close sales more effectively and taking your sales force to the next level. As far as my contact information, my website is www.catalyticadvisors.com, and I also tweet at EverettHill1, the number one.
Okay, so Everett Hill with Catalytic Advisors. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank
Jill,
you.
You're up.
Yes. Pearl of wisdom. Coaching and sales are really both based on two things, ultimately. One is communication, the ability to speak clearly, coherently, and concisely. And, of course, listening. The other, not just half, but piece of communication, listening attentively. And then the second part is what we at Head Coach call partnering, the ability to build constructive relationships, which are, of course, based on trust. I invite any of your listeners to contact me at jillpollard@headcoachinc.com. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Jill. Dwayne.
I'll just repeat something earlier, and that is persuade through involvement. That's the key, is to guide the person you're coaching to the results that they want to come to themselves, but help them come to that conclusion on their own. The other thing I'll just mention quickly is, again, don't dismiss strategy. It's very important to have a good strategy on the front end, because it gives the sales force focus, and it helps you align all your resources and efforts toward the success that you want to achieve.
All right. Thank you, Dwayne. And any contact information?
You know,
LinkedIn?
You can feel free to contact me directly at dgingrich@bellsouth.net.
All right. Thank you very much. Bob.
Okay, so my pearl is a little big picture. I would submit that at the end of the day, coaching is important because what really matters is making people who work for you better, or if you're leading an organization, making people who are part of your organization better. No one on their deathbed ever, thinks about how great it was to make the number. They think about what impact they had on other people they worked with. And so this stuff is important. You know, I think there are economic reasons it's important, but, for people who want to be fulfilled professionals and managers, it's important for that reason. It makes other people around you better. So that's my inspirational
pearl of wisdom.
So our community would welcome involvement from your listeners. We're on the web at salesmanagement.org. For listeners who are in Houston, Chicago, Atlanta, Boston, San Francisco, or Minneapolis, we have local chapter organizations that meet quarterly, and those are nice events. And then each year we host a conference here in Atlanta. That's October 23rd through 25th. That will be at the Intercontinental Buckhead here in Atlanta. It's a conference with about 250 sales force effectiveness professionals, managers, and sales ops professionals, and would welcome listeners attending that as well. So hope to see you online or at our future events. Thanks for having me.
Okay, my pleasure. Well, thank you guys all for your time. And to our listeners, we certainly appreciate taking some time out of your day to listen to this fascinating topic of coaching and sales management. So until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA/SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.